Welcome to Federal Insights for March, empowering the federal workforce to make better, faster decisions that improve the effectiveness of government. Sponsored by Click.
The Army is one of the biggest talent management organizations anywhere. Now it's starting to use data and analytics to improve that function. For details, I spoke with the Data and Artificial Intelligence Chief in the Talent Management Office of the Assistant Secretary of the Army for Manpower and Reserve Affairs, Lieutenant Colonel Kristen Sayling.
We actually go back to 2014, 2015, 2016, although the task force has only really been energized and effecting wide-scale change in the past couple of years. It was part of a program that we had a number of different folks at our Office of Economic and Manpower Analysis up at West Point working on. We had a number of people in the G1, the personnel divisions looking at trying to figure out what was essentially a data problem, which, you know, is always exciting for those of us who work in data. We have the technology to be able to see our people to much greater depth. And we had antiquated processes that really came around in the 1980s that didn't take any of those into account and forced our senior leaders to make a lot of assumptions about about the talent we had. As we started entering an era of more rapid change, where we had a lot of structure changes coming back and forth, we had changing mission sets, we started looking at how we could move faster to get after new technologies. And we started looking at multi-domain operations. And we really started to realize we needed to bring together all this data that we had on our people to get after our force and understand essentially how we get the right person in the right job at the right time and how we change our processes so that we can do this over time.
Okay. And does this cover uniformed and civilian personnel in the Army?
So the Army People Strategy covers uniformed and civilian personnel. Our effort is subordinate to that. The Army Talent Management Task Force is primarily military personnel. We have representatives from the Guard and Reserve also, so we're trying to take what the policy changes that we're making across components. But we partner with DASA CP, the Deputy Assistant Secretary of the Army for Civilian Personnel, underneath the Assistant Secretary of the Army for Manpower and Reserve Affairs, for the civilian side. They have a civilian implementation plan that they're looking at concurrently with the work we're doing.
So you've got something of a complicated problem because of the dynamic nature of the uniform force. For one thing, regardless of what the end strength authorized by Congress is, the Army is bringing in new people by the tens of thousands every year, and that many people are going out the top end every year. So you've got this flow that's probably more turnover than you might see in a regular organization. So does that make the data challenge somewhat more challenging?
It does and it doesn't. Prior to coming to Talent Management Task Force, I worked for the G1 doing manpower and strength forecasting. And we had what was essentially a closed system. People entered in one way and they would exit throughout the cycle. But unless you came in on an initial accession or unless you were commissioned through one of our commissioning sources, we had some rare occasions of call to active duty where we brought people into the active component from the Guard and Reserve. And we had some rare instances of direct commissioning, but those are mostly in the special branches. Otherwise, there was really only one way to come in. So we had a funnel coming in and we had a certain amount of attrition happening over the course of a soldier or a officer life cycle. That piece was actually fairly easy to model. We start introducing all these new policies, though, and we start bringing in more people from direct commission. We start looking at a concept we're calling permeability, which would allow people to move across components and potentially from our civilian workforce into the active component or into the Guard and Reserve a lot more easily. We're working on some legislation for that right now, and you start getting a much more complicated model.
And getting to the data about the people, what are the sources of it? What are the types and nature of the data that you're dealing with?
So we had to do a pretty comprehensive data inventory. We got lucky because we have a really good partnership with IPSE, the Integrated Pay and Personnel System Army. They're standing up. It's already in use in the Guard and Reserve right now. And our release that's going to take on the active component data is coming out in December of this year. They had already done a large amount of the system mapping, but they're undertaking, and I don't envy them this task, getting, I think we had up to 187 different personnel systems, trying to get those determine that which of those are going to sunset and which of those are going to be pulled into the larger data sphere. We've been working with them on that because most of the data they didn't have mapped, we have mapped as part of the ASA MNRA's Human Capital Big Data Program. So first step was taking a look at what we actually had. We really spent some time mapping out the kind of questions that we wanted to be able to answer for our decision makers about the force. And we found out that there was, while we have a lot of data, some of the data, you know, we're going through the same kind of data quality issues that everybody else goes through, but we didn't have answers in a lot of spaces. We had a lot of blanks.
But it seems like initially you had this huge issue of data interoperability. If there's all these different personnel systems, you want to know somebody's age or service record or something, you have to make sure that the data would be comparable across all those systems so you had a picture of the Army as one force.
Well, even within the system, because we've had our systems for a while. We've been keeping Army data on these systems for quite some time. But in the process, and you know, as we as data scientists are always bad about documenting our code, we're bad about keeping it as data managers as well. You could have a column where everything in that column is an N, but it means five different things because we changed a policy underlying it, and you know, somebody forgot to annotate it somewhere. So we're relying very heavily on the expertise that we have in the personnel arena between Human Resources Command and the G1 to unsnarl some of that as we figure out what the data that we have actually means.
Kristen Saling, Data and Artificial Intelligence Chief in the Talent Management Office of the Assistant Secretary of the Army for Manpower and Reserve Affairs. We'll be back with more of the interview after this short break. I'm Tom Temin.
The current approach federal agencies use to deliver data to the systems and people that rely on it are resulting in missed opportunities and milestones, higher costs, and failed projects. At the same time, new statutes and policies require federal agencies to use data in all decision-making about programs, operations, and budgets. Agencies must accelerate the delivery of data and establish programs that enable a more data-literate workforce, effectively reducing the time and cost associated with the execution of their missions. Click can help. QLIK.com/public sector.
Welcome back to our interview with Kristen Saling, Data and Artificial Intelligence Chief in the Talent Management Office of the Assistant Secretary of the Army for Manpower and Reserve Affairs. Our topic is data analytics. And let's talk about some of the analytical use cases that you were envisioning while pulling all of this together and presuming that you have a comprehensive and usable set of data now. And maybe that's a big assumption, but that's your goal. What about the use cases for all of this to apply to all of this data?
So our primary purpose for collecting all of this data was to create a talent marketplace for the Army. Previously, we had everybody assigned from a central location, a Human Resources Command. The branch managers were responsible for understanding the talent sets that they had within their inventory and making those alignments. They had some pretty detailed processes for it, but that was the essence of it. And we decided through talent management that we as the Army wanted to give our personnel greater control of their careers, the ability to chart their own career trajectories, to set their goals, and to take a larger role in their development. So we figured you have a couple different goals out of this. One is increased productivity. People are gravitating towards where they have knowledge, skills, and behaviors that align with a job responsibility set. And we figure, you know, people are able to have a larger degree of being able to select where they're going, it's going to increase retention. So those were the two primary goals of this marketplace. Now we've got a massive amount of information out there that we're asking the Army to process, looking at all these assignments that they previously didn't really have to worry about. And especially commands as hiring officials now, we're now having to teach commands how you build a team, how you select a good candidate, how you go through and do all of the stuff that was previously done for them in a central location. So a lot of our analytics are geared towards helping them solve that problem.
But it sounds like you have really two challenges. One is the analytical questions and the tools to do the analysis. But it sounds like you also had to build applications on top of this data because not everyone is doing data analysis. They're just trying to see who's out there that might match my need. Or if I'm a soldier at some level, here's where I want to go next. You need to have an application in the front of that data so that they can go ahead and do the mapping and the selection that they need. Is that a good way to
exactly
put it?
No, we're looking at recommendation engines. I mean, my boss likes to use the Amazon example. where, you know, I purchased this, I was happy with this, here's some other things I might like. Well, let's say I made a hiring decision. Where are the folks who have some characteristics like my last successful hire? Or can I just plain put in the characteristics I want in this job and find the people who are the potential best match candidates? So we start with that. We've also started looking at rolling out a career mapping function. This will also be within IPSE, that'll let people kind of create an intelligent IDP, an individual development plan, where we use some of these different recommendation functions to say, okay, here's where your skills are. Here's where you want to be. Let's kind of build you a pathway to get there. Let's build you several pathways and let you share those with mentors and coaches, let you share those with commanders so they can help advise you, or just kind of keep track of those so you can see what the what your different mentors and coaches think you might be good at and what you need to do in order to build those skills.
And what about the promotion boards? How does all of this map against their activities?
So we're doing a number of different promotion reforms right now. We have recently rolled out opt-in and opt-out. So we're letting people take greater control of when they are going to go up for promotion. This also lets them make some decisions about developing further in a career, maybe moving a little bit away from some of the traditional assignment paths and not getting penalized for it. So I think as we go forward, one of the things that we're looking at is what a career trajectory needs to look like for an individual, and if we can take off some of the constraints that we've had previously, like time and grade. Is there a maximum or minimum time and grade that we can offer? And then within that, it's choose your own adventure.
All right. And talking about some of the analytical tools themselves, maybe give us a sense of the data architecture and the underlying way that you handle the data and store it and deliver it up to people that might need it. And what about the tool selection and the ever-present challenge of having the right tools, but not having too many, that it gets to be hard to manage and expensive?
Exactly. We have a couple different programs that we're using to consolidate the data right now and to come up with more authoritative data sources. The primary one for the People Enterprise is going to be IPSE. Their data warehouse is going to be the primary one that we're using to develop these analytics, so that way we can make sure it's all cleaned, it's ordered, and we're working with the same data set. Tool selection is something that we're doing in concert with IPSE, just because of their chartered releases and the number of different talent management requirements we've already put in there. But one of the things that we're doing is we are test piloting a lot of different things that we could potentially use. That allows us to take a look at different tools that meet the requirements, figure out what things we didn't know when we were building those requirements initially, but most importantly, making sure that we have the understanding of the underlying data that we need in order to make these tools run. And this has spawned a alignment of attributes and characteristics across the People Enterprise, and that includes our Training and Doctrine Command. They've been some significant partners in there. Army Research Institute, Army Research Labs, Army Futures Command, looking at what the future of maximizing human performance needs to look like. Everybody's coming together and actually working on a common lexicon for human performance terms, which is something I haven't seen.
Sure. And then you've got the issue of IT, and you probably have to have a pretty close tie-in with the Army CIO office and channel to make sure that you get the resources to support all of this data work.
Yes, we do. Fortunately, they've been extremely cooperative. They are undergoing right now, between the CIO and the G6, a project right now that they're calling Quantum Leap. This is a holistic review of the skill sets within that organization and upskilling, recoding, reskilling, education to make a certain number of positions each year more data enabled. So we're trying to get more and more data savvy folks throughout the enterprise there. We're trying to take their model and spread it out throughout the Army and figure out kind of what the base level of data literacy or data fluency, depending on what we end up terming it, needs to be for the Army in order to be able to use these tools.
Yeah, because that's a challenge I think a lot of data officers and data people have, is that there is enough data literacy surrounding them, because you don't know what answers people want. They know what answers, but often they don't know what they need to get to that answer. So you've got to kind of close that gap. What are some of the ways you're making sure that there's a little bit more data literacy out there in the people that you interact with?
And so we have an effort going on right now. We're calling it Army Data Workforce. It's underneath our Army Data Modernization Plan. And we're looking holistically at not just the data science talent, because we look at data scientists, data analysts, data engineers, all the way reaching into artificial intelligence, cloud, all of those different talent sets. We've got those pretty well mapped. I think the Army as a whole understands kind of what capabilities we need to have and we need to train in those personnel. But what we're really trying to look at now is the, we're calling them our enablers. So do we have that contract writer who understands how data is stored, how it's warehoused, how it's piped? Do we have a smart lawyer who understands privacy law, who understands all the different aspects of data storage, data destruction plans, and so forth? Do we have the smart operators who understand how to integrate data and analytic solutions into their decision process? So we are really trying to figure out what that talent set looks like and how we reach out to the different organizations that train these folks and pipe some of that in. We've had a great working relationship so far with our Combined Arms Center on this. General Rainey and his crew are very interested in making this a capability and looking at how we integrate data into our professional military education.
Kristen Sailing, Data and Artificial Intelligence Chief in the Talent Management Office of the Assistant Secretary of the Army for Manpower and Reserve Affairs. We'll be back with the third and final segment of the interview after this short break. I'm Tom Temin.
The current approach federal agencies use to deliver data to the systems and people that rely on it are resulting in missed opportunities and milestones, higher costs, and failed projects. At the same time, new statutes and policies require federal agencies to use data in all decision-making about programs, operations, and budgets. Agencies must accelerate the delivery of data and establish programs that enable a more data-literate workforce, effectively reducing the time and cost associated with the execution of their missions. Click can help. QLIK.com/public sector.
Welcome back to our third and final segment of our interview with Kristen Sailing, Data and Artificial Intelligence Chief in the Talent Management Office of the Assistant Secretary of the Army for Manpower and Reserve Affairs. We've been discussing data analytics. And is there any cooperation needed, or is it happening, say, with the JAIC, the Joint Artificial Intelligence Center, which in many ways we're learning is focusing not so much on the wowza type of far-fetched ideas in warfare, but on just getting some of the routine things automated and cleared out of people's ways so that they can concentrate on the really important futures. Working with them at all in this endeavor?
We are. We have a couple of representatives from the JAIC who sit in our Army Data Workforce, our working group. And we try to make sure that we're aligned both with them. We also sit in the DOD, we being members of my working group. We sit in the DOD CDO Council. We reach out to the AI workforce planning effort that's going on at OSD. So we're trying to stay integrated all the way from the federal data strategy down into the work that we're doing, just so we can, well, partly so we don't reinvent the wheel. But again, it's kind of having that common lexicon, that common talent set. This is kind of jumping ahead, but you know, I can see a future where data is very joint, where we have a lot of this talent at the joint level, and we're permeable across service components. But this is also coming from a few years at a joint command.
Sure.
Seeing the value of that.
And I imagine that one of the challenges also is making analytics actionable, because just for example, the idea of prediction and workforce planning, predictive analytics, what is the workforce? How is it changing? What's going to look like? What will it look like in 5 years? What do we need to do to shape it to the way we want it to be in 5 years? That kind of question. How do you make that happen?
So we have a lot of partnership with the strategic planning teams, our campaign planners, kind of talking about that. What do we see the Army doing overall in 5 years? How do we see the Army thinking? Because data, when it comes down to it, data and analytics are inherently tied to decision science. We ask that question a lot when we're developing analytics, not just, okay, we kind of understand what this thing is going to do. We need to predict, but how is it going to be used? How is it going to inform a decision? So we have a project going on right now called the Retention Prediction Model Army. It is a massive neural net that produces individual prediction vectors for each individual service member. And the thing's pretty accurate, but that's been the question. It's like, what information do I present to different decision makers? How do we shape that for them? What is the frequency that they need to receive updates in order to make it most useful and make it timely for their decision cycles? So we end up developing an analytic, but simultaneously developing a map of the decision processes it needs to integrate with and coming up with a holistic integration plan.
And does your data analytics projects, the ones that you have going, do they also interact with other systems? I'm thinking of, say, the health records that pertain to each service member, because events in someone's health history could affect how they could be deployed in a more useful way or a more effective way for both them and the Army. And how do you handle that? And how do you handle the privacy issues that might come up also?
Yeah, no, that's a great point, because we do a huge amount of work and a huge amount of research in privacy law and privacy protection policies. We do a significant amount of work with the Research Facilitation Lab in Monterey. It's part of the Army Analytics Group, and they have a human research protections officer out there who provides some of the advice. We interact with research institutions. Again, named the Army Research Institute is one of our primary partners, who have an IRB, an Internal Review Board type functionality that we can use to say, okay, are we staying within the ethics lines when we're trying to develop these things? When we're collecting data from an assessment, are we going to use it appropriately? We also have a good partnership with AHRPO, which is the Army Human Research Resource Protection Office. And they do a very similar function. They review all of the different things, make sure that we are staying within the lines of whether it's something that counts as operational decision-making or research, so forth. We generate a fair amount of surveys, and there's a whole separate process for collecting data with the surveys. But we've actually produced a couple of kind of how-to guides for our organization. Just like, here, you want to collect a piece of data. Let's talk about where you go. Let's talk about what you do for your protections. That's led us to some interesting discussions too, because right now we're reviewing the language put forth in the Privacy Act. And that's been an interesting piece because of when it was written. The principles still apply, but it's really not written for the porous and permeable, the federated data environments that we're trying to create. It's you can't read it and figure out what you would do with wearable technology as a data collection source. So we're currently staffing some recommendations for how we need to change that language in order to ensure that we have the capability of protecting people's information as it comes into the system, making sure that it's got the right provenance attached to it, making sure that we are protecting it accordingly as it moves as a data element and attaches to different records. So this piece is, it's weird to say I'm getting excited about doing policy review, but when you integrate it with the technological advances that we're trying to make, it's exciting.
But it sounds like the work you're doing really has no endpoint. This is a continuous development and continuous improvement type of effort, isn't it?
Absolutely. I mean, that's a perfect way of phrasing how we're starting to try to get the Army to think. You know, previously we look at plans and we say, okay, we've got some objectives, we've got some end states. Well, when you look at technological development, we don't really have end states. We have version one. And okay, we get to version one and we need to start looking at what this thing needs to modernize to in its next iteration. And that's a fairly easy leap to take that kind of methodology to a personnel system, a policy system, or a lot of the other processes we do, and effectively get yourself a continual process improvement setup.
Kristen Sailing, Data and Artificial Intelligence Chief in the Talent Management Office of the Assistant Secretary of the Army for Manpower and Reserve Affairs. To hear this interview in its entirety or to share it with colleagues, please visit federalnewsnetwork.com and search Insights. I'm Tom Temin.
Thank you for listening to Federal Insights for March, sponsored by Click on Federal News Network.
When we need help, we turn to government. When government needs help, they turn to Federal News Network. Federal News Network, helping feds meet their mission.